The Dialogue of St. Catherine of Siena, Part 18. How this devout soul seeks knowledge from God concerning the state and fruit of tears. Then this soul, yearning with very great desire, and rising as one intoxicated both by the union which she had had with God, and by what she had heard and tasted of the supreme and sweet truth, yearned with grief over the ignorance of creatures, in that they did not know their benefactor, or the affection of the love of God. And nevertheless she had joy from the hope of the promise that the truth of God had made to her, teaching her the way she was to direct her will, and the other servants of God as well as herself, in order that he should do mercy to the world. And lifting up the eye of her intellect upon the sweet truth, to whom she remained united, wishing to know somewhat of the aforesaid states of the soul of which God had spoken to her, and seeing that the soul passes through these states with tears, she wished to learn from the truth concerning the different kinds of tears, and how they came to be, and whence they proceeded, and the fruit that resulted from weeping. Wishing then to know this from the sweet, supreme, and first truth, as to the manner of being and reason of the aforesaid tears, and inasmuch as the truth cannot be learnt from any other than from the truth himself, and nothing can be learnt in the truth but what is seen by the eye of the intellect, she made her request of the truth. For it is necessary for him who is lifted with desire to learn the truth with the light of faith. Wherefore, knowing that she had not forgotten the teaching which the truth, that is, God, had given her, that in no other way could she learn about the different states and fruits of tears, she rose out of herself, exceeding every limit of her nature with the greatness of her desire. And with the light of a lively faith, she opened the eye of her intellect upon the eternal truth, in whom she saw and knew the truth in the matter of her request. For God himself manifested it to her, and condescending in his benignity to her burning desire, fulfilled her petition. How there are five kinds of tears. Then said the supreme and sweet truth of God, O beloved and dearest daughter, you beg knowledge of the reasons and fruits of tears, and I have not despised your desire. Open well the eye of your intellect, and I will show you, among the aforesaid states of the soul, of which I have told you, concerning the imperfect tears caused by fear, but first, rather, of the tears of wicked men of the world. These are the tears of damnation. The former are those of fear, and belong to men who abandon sin from fear of punishment, and weep for fear. The third are the tears of those who, having abandoned sin, are beginning to serve and taste me, and weep for very sweetness. But since their love is imperfect, so also is their weeping, as I have told you. The fourth are the tears of those who have arrived at the perfect love of their neighbor, loving me without any regard whatsoever for themselves. These weep, and their weeping is perfect. The fifth are joined to the fourth, and are tears of sweetness let fall with great peace, as I will explain to you. I will tell you also of the tears of fire, without bodily tears of the eyes, which satisfy those who often would desire to weep and cannot. And I wish you to know that all these various graces may exist in one soul, who, rising from fear and imperfect love, reaches perfect love in the unitive state. Now I will begin to tell you of these tears in the following way. Of the difference of these tears, arising from the explanation of the aforesaid state of the soul. I wish you to know that every tear proceeds from the heart, for there is no member of the body that will satisfy the heart so much as the eye. If the heart is in pain, the eye manifests it, and if the pain be sensual, the eye drops hearty tears which engender death, because proceeding from the heart, they are caused by a disordinate love distinct from the love of me. For such love, being disordinate and an offense to me, receives the meed of mortal pain and tears. It is true that their guilt and grief are more or less heavy, according to the measure of their disordinate love. And these form that first class who have the tears of death, of whom I have spoken to you and will speak again. Now, begin to consider the tears which give the commencement of life, the tears, that is, of those who, knowing their guilt, set to weeping for fear of the penalty they have incurred. These are both hearty and sensual tears, because the soul, not having yet arrived at perfect hatred of its guilt on account of the offense thereby done to me, abandons it with a hearty grief for the penalty which follows the sin committed, while the eye weeps in order to satisfy the grief of the heart. But the soul, exercising herself in virtue, begins to lose her fear, knowing that fear alone is not sufficient to give her eternal life, as I have already told you when speaking of the second stage of the soul. And so she proceeds, with love, to know herself and my goodness in her, and begins to take hope in my mercy, in which her heart feels joy. Sorrow for her grief, mingled with the joy of her hope in my mercy, causes her eye to weep, which tears issue from the very fountain of her heart. But inasmuch as she has not yet arrived at great perfection, she often drops sensual tears, and if you ask me why, I reply, because the root of self-love is not sensual love, for that has already been removed, as has been said, but it is a spiritual love with which the soul desires spiritual consolations, or loves some creature spiritually. I have spoken to you at length regarding the imperfections of such souls. Wherefore, when such a soul is deprived of the thing she loved, that is, eternal or external consolation, the internal being the consolation received from me, the external being that which she had from the creature, and when temptations and the persecutions of men come on her, her heart is full of grief. And as soon as the eye feels the grief and suffering of the heart, she begins to weep with a tender and compassionate sorrow, pitying herself with the spiritual compassion of self-love. For her self-will is not yet crushed and destroyed in everything, and in this way she lets fall sensual tears, tears, that is, of spiritual passion. But growing and exercising herself in the light of self-knowledge, she conceives displeasure at herself and finally perfect self-hatred. From this she draws true knowledge of my goodness with a fire of love, and she begins to unite herself to me, and to conform her will to mine, and so to feel joy and compassion. Joy in herself, through the affection of love, and compassion for her neighbor, as I told you in speaking of the third stage. Immediately her eye, wishing to satisfy the heart, cries with hearty love for me and for her neighbor, grieving solely for my offense and her neighbor's loss, and not for any penalty or loss due to herself, for she does not think of herself, but only rendering glory and praise to my name. And in an ecstasy of desire, she joyfully takes the food prepared for her on the table of the Holy Cross, thus conforming herself to the humble, patient, and immaculate Lamb, my only begotten Son, of whom I made a bridge, as I have said. Having thus sweetly traveled by that bridge, following the doctrine of my sweet truth, enduring with true and sweet patience every pain and trouble which I have permitted to be inflicted upon her for her salvation, having manfully received them all, not choosing them according to her own tastes, but accepting them according to mine, and not only, as I said, enduring them with patience, but sustaining them with joy, she counts it glory to be persecuted for my name's sake, in whatever she may have to suffer. Then the soul arrives at such delight and tranquility of mind that no tongue can tell it. Having crossed the river by means of the eternal word, that is, by the doctrine of my only begotten Son, and having fixed the eye of her intellect on me, the sweet supreme truth, having seen the truth, knows it, and knowing it, loves it. Drawing her affection after her intellect, she tastes my eternal deity, and she knows and sees the divine nature united to your humanity. Then she reposes in me, the sea Pacific, and her heart is united to me in love, as I told you when speaking of the fourth and unitive state. When she thus feels me, the eternal deity, her eyes let fall tears of sweetness, tears indeed of milk, nourishing the soul in true patience. An odoriferous ointment are these tears, shedding odors of great sweetness. Oh, best beloved daughter, how glorious is that soul who has indeed been able to pass from the stormy ocean to me, the sea Pacific, and in that sea which is myself, the supreme and eternal deity, to fill the pitcher of her heart. And her eye, the conduit of her heart, endeavors to satisfy her heart pangs, and so sheds tears. This is the last stage in which the soul is blessed and sorrowful. Blessed she is through the union which she feels herself to have with me, tasting the divine love, sorrowful through the offenses which she sees done to my goodness and greatness. For she has seen and tasted the bitterness of this in her self-knowledge, by which self-knowledge, together with her knowledge of me, she arrived at the final stage. Yet this sorrow is no impediment to the unitive state, which produces tears of great sweetness through self-knowledge, gained in love of the neighbor, in which exercise the soul discovers the plaint of my divine mercy, and grief at the offenses caused to her neighbor, weeping with those who weep, and rejoicing with those who rejoice, that is, who live in my love. Over these the soul rejoices, seeing glory and praise rendered me by my servants, so that the third kind of grief does not prevent the fourth, that is, the final grief belonging to the unitive state. They rather give savor to each other, for had not this last grief, in which the soul finds such union with me, developed from the grief belonging to the third state of neighborly love, it would not be perfect. Therefore it is necessary that the one should flavor the other, else the soul would come to a state of presumption induced by the subtle breeze of love of her own reputation, and would fall at once, vomited from the heights to the depths. Therefore, it is necessary to bear with others and practice continually love to one's neighbor, together with true knowledge of oneself. In this way will she feel the fire of my love in herself, because love of her neighbor is developed out of love of me, that is, out of that learning which the soul obtained by knowing herself and my goodness in her. When, therefore, she sees herself to be ineffably loved by me, she loves every rational creature with the self-same love with which she sees herself to be loved. And for this reason, the soul that knows me immediately expands to the love of her neighbor, because she sees that I love that neighbor ineffably, and so herself loves the object which she sees me to have loved still more. She further knows that she can be of no use to me, and can in no way repay me that pure love with which she feels herself to be loved by me, and therefore endeavors to repay it through the medium which I have given her, namely, her neighbor, who is the medium through which you can all serve me. For as I have said to you, you can perform all virtues by means of your neighbor, I having given you all creatures, in general and in particular, according to the diverse graces each has received from me, to be ministered unto by you. You should therefore love them with the same pure love with which I have loved you. that pure love cannot be returned directly to me, because I have loved you without being myself loved, and without any consideration of myself whatsoever. For I loved you without being loved by you, before you existed. It was indeed love that moved me to create you to my own image and similitude. This love you cannot repay to me, but you can pay it to my rational creature. Loving your neighbor without being loved by him, and without consideration of your own advantage, whether spiritual or temporal, but loving him solely for the praise and glory of my name, because he has been loved by me. Thus will you fulfill the commandment of the law, to love me above everything, and your neighbor as yourselves. True indeed is it that this height cannot be reached without passing through the second stage, namely, the second stage of union, which becomes the third and final stage. Nor can it be preserved when it has been reached, if the soul abandon the affection from which it has been developed, the affection to which the second class of tears belongs. It is therefore impossible to fulfill the law given by me, the eternal God, without fulfilling that of your neighbor. For these two laws are the feet of your affection, by which the precepts and counsels are observed, which were given you, as I have told you, by my truth, Christ crucified. These two states united nourish your soul in virtue, making her to grow in the perfection of virtue and in the unitive state. Not that the other state is changed, because this further state has been reached, for this further state does but increase the riches of grace in new and various gifts and admirable elevations of the mind, in the knowledge of the truth, as I said to you, which, though it is mortal, appears immortal, because the soul's perfection of her own sensuality is mortified, and her will is dead through the union which she has attained with me. Oh, how sweet is the taste of this union to the soul, for in tasting it she sees my secrets. Wherefore she often receives the spirit of prophecy, knowing the things of the future. This is the effect of my goodness. But the humble soul should despise such things, not indeed in so far as they are given her by my love, but in so far as she desires them by reason of her appetite for consolation, considering herself unworthy of the peace and quiet in mind, in order to nourish virtue within her soul. In such a case, let her not remain in the second stage, but return to the valley of self-knowledge. I give her this light, my grace permitting, so that she may ever grow in virtue. For the soul is never so perfect in this life that she cannot attain to a higher perfection of love. My only begotten Son, your captain, was the only one who could increase in no perfection, because he was one thing with me, and I with him, wherefore his soul was blessed through union with the divine nature. But do you, his pilgrim members, be ever ready to grow in greater perfection? Not indeed to another stage, for, as I have said, you have now reached the last, but to that further grade of perfection in the last stage, which may please you by means of my grace.